virus, cases spiking to all-time highs. But as usual, the media is not telling you the whole story. Instead, in my opinion, the media is once again politicizing this pandemic just ahead of an election to help influence the outcome. You know, all you hear is about how cases are escalating and how it's going to be such a horrible winter with hundreds of thousands more dying. But before we all panic, before we all shut down our economy again, before we all hide in our basement again, you know, I want to point out that no one in the media is talking about how good we're actually doing. And there should be a little bit of celebration for how much we've improved, right? Because in other words, what you're seeing currently is a sharp drop in the mortality of those that are hospitalized. And that is a big, big deal. You know, here's something the liberal media will not tell you about. There's a new peer-reviewed study out of NYU that's showing a sharp drop in this mortality among hospitalized COVID-19 patients. Now, the drop is being seen in all groups, including older patients, including those with underlying conditions. And it really is suggesting that, you know what, doctors are getting a handle on this. They really are. And now they're much better able to help patients survive this illness. You know, the study looked at patients between March and August, and it was in a single healthcare system at NYU. It looked at roughly 5,000 hospitalizations in the NYU Langone Health System between March and August, and it found that mortality has dropped among hospitalized patients by 18 percentage points since the pandemic began. Patients in the study, in the beginning, they had a 25.6% chance of dying, which is pretty awful at the start of the pandemic. Now they have a 7.6% chance, which is still, right, pretty awful, but nonetheless, a vast improvement. And they found that death rates, this is important, they have dropped for all groups, even older patients as well. So all groups by 18 percentage points on average. So that's good news. But, you know, good luck finding it anywhere, because the headlines you keep getting hit with out of the mainstream media one after another, it's like total hysteria out there. They're trying to ensure some kind of panic, which I do believe has something to do with this election. You know, they're politicizing this, and they have from the beginning, as I've maintained, and I got in a whole lot of trouble for, by the way, but I'll still stand by everything I said, in that they politicized this pandemic. They were deliberately trying to make it dangerous and scary for everyday people. So instead of us being pragmatic about this, instead of listening to the science and really understanding that certain groups were at risk while other groups were not, what did? We shut down our entire country. We shut down the whole economy. And yet Governor Cuomo was out there. Cuomo was sending people with COVID-19 into nursing homes, thereby exposing the most vulnerable people in his state to coronavirus. And yet somehow he comes out smelling like a rose. Well, I suspect that has a little something to do with the media interpretation of everything as well. You know, when they talk about how these numbers are rising, they've got to do so by putting it in context. But I guess that's just too much to ask for them. I mean, if you read through the Washington Post story or New York Times, they really have a hard time getting around to saying, well, fewer people are dying. It's just the screaming headlines about how awful this is. And then, yeah, you know, my goodness, can you believe Mike Pence? He's actually still out there campaigning, you know, even though he's on stage and he's really far away from all the other people. You know, the concern being that one of his staff members has tested positive. And so now they're accusing the White House of going and spreading this throughout society. I mean, the venom right now coming from the media is off the charts. They are trying to use this pandemic to effectively their advantage. And I just find that really disheartening and despicable. Just report the facts, guys. Okay. If you're an opinion journalist, I get it. You know what? You guys know my opinion. You know my opinion. You know how much I believe in our Constitution and in freedom. And that includes economic freedom. I am a red-blooded American capitalist, and I'm proud of it. You know, it's not perfect, by the way. It's another conversation for another day. And there are things that we can do to make it better and tweak it. And that's where government comes in. For example, protecting us, right, from big conglomerates that want to outsource everything to China. But, you know, at our heart, in our hearts, I believe as Americans, we are fundamentally capitalist because this is part of our freedom, right? But hey, as far as the media goes, yeah, they've always been in love with socialism. They've always been in love with communism, frankly. You know, that's one of the reasons why Cuba gets so romanticized. Let me tell you, there's nothing romantic about Cuba. There's nothing romantic about Venezuela. There is nothing romantic about poverty. And they ought to think about that. But, you know, as far as coronavirus goes, hey, why let context ruin a good story, right? Why let context ruin their headlines? The media and the left, they have their headlines. And they're going to use whatever ammunition they can to try and take down this president. I think the American public sees through it. And I think that the media is going to wake up after the election and be awfully, awfully surprised by that. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, yes, she is back. She's back. And she's really working that annoying little goody two shoes thing. Just too much trying to rub it in, saying she would have been on a much, much better job than Donald Trump with coronavirus. We're going to talk about that next. If I were the Democrat Party, I would just be begging her. I'd be begging her to just go down into the basement and to never appear on camera, on a podcast, on radio, anywhere again, certainly before the election. But you know, she can't stay away from the spotlight, so Hillary Clinton is back. And she's telling Kira Swisher from the New York Times that she would have handled COVID-19 so much better than Donald Trump. In fact, when Ms. Swisher asked her if she thought, quote, a woman president in the United States would handle the pandemic better, Clinton responded, direct quote, "I have no doubt, especially if it were me. I have no doubt. I mean, I was born for that." That's what I said. I mean, the goody two shoes thing. I was born for that. You know, you were, huh? Too bad you needed this little thing called the American people to actually vote for you if you were so born for it. Meanwhile, she also insists that the idea of Trump winning makes her sick to her stomach. Well, maybe she's just going to have to live with a little nausea, right? The problem, repeatedly, is that Clinton, Biden, Harris, big tech, big media, they want to make this all about good versus evil. Forget the actual policy itself. Forget that they're looking to remake our great American economy into some kind of banana republic. Forget that they're trying to enrich the status of these big global companies by creating better policies for conglomerates while leaving the rest of us, OUT, out in the cold, small business owners seeing their taxes go up potentially under Biden. Not potentially, they will go up under Biden. I say potentially only because he might not win. He probably won't win. That's yesterday's podcast. You should check that out because there's a real path for Trump to win this thing. And I think he's going to get Florida and a bunch of other states. Meanwhile, you know what? If your taxes don't go up, well, then your income, it will most likely be going down. There have been numerous studies on this out of UChicago, out of the Hoover Institution. And it talks about the ripple effects of this $4 trillion tax plan that he wants to put into place. So you know what? I'll tell you, this is not about good versus bad. This is not good versus evil. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's the only theme Joe Biden can actually remember. But the truth is, this is about policy for the next 4 years. And the policy itself is going to be so important. Anyway, Joe Biden, like I said, you know, maybe he just can't remember that. Maybe the theme of good versus evil is all he can kind of grasp. He had another major gaffe that really ought to have everyone questioning whether or not this man is capable at this point of being president. You know, we all get older. I'm not an ageist, but some people just don't age as well as others. And he's really starting to show his age, though the mainstream media refuses once again to report on it. I'm on it. So there's misspeaking, and then there's, well, the plain old issue of just getting old before your time, right? He's had a lot of gaffes, definitely a lot of gaffes. He can't remember what office he's running for. Sometimes he thinks it's the Senate. He's even referred to a Harris administration. Perhaps he knows something we don't. And now there's this. Joe Biden cannot remember who is president of the United States of America, who he's actually running against. And, you know, he needs to be reminded by his wife that it's no longer George, you know, one of those Bushes. He didn't specify which one, but it's in fact Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the president of the United States. What the heck is going on in this country when we have a nominee that doesn't quite seem to know what day it is? I mean, he's out there doing this interview, right, via video at a concert to encourage people to go out and vote. And he says the following, and I quote, "The character of the country, in my view, is literally on the ballot. What kind of country we're going to be? 4 more years of George. George." At which point his wife, Jill, is seen on tape muttering Trump underneath her breath. It's great. You got to watch it. You can see it at trishintel.com. Anyway, she says this. He picks up his sentence with, quote, "Gonna find ourselves in a position where if Trump gets elected, we're going to be in a different world." So finally, he remembered it's not George that's president of the United States right now. It's Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump had a little fun with that, as you can imagine, poking fun at him on Twitter and also pointing out mainstream media is not covering it. And you know what? He's right. Look, I'm not an ageist. Again, I have enormous respect for my elders, but I mean, really. I mean, this kind of misspeaking is a little questionable. Like, what happens, like, if you have a concussion or something, right? Or you just come out of a coma or any of that? You know, one of the things that they'll use to check your cognitive ability is who's the president of the United States. And poor Joe Biden doesn't seem to know. I mean, they keep talking about Trump being your crazy old uncle. Well, Biden sure seems like a crazy old uncle to me, one with dementia possibly at that. Again, I'm not suggesting he actually does, you know, God forbid anybody accuses me of suggesting that he has dementia. I am not saying that in any way, shape, or form. However, I am questioning why he forgets so many things. I mean, isn't that a legitimate question? The media just won't talk about this. They won't talk about anything that would hurt their candidate, which is why you don't hear anything about Biden Inc. Biden Inc., big tech, totally suppressing that story, doing everything it can to shut it down. Do you know that the New York Post account on Twitter is still locked? I mean, how is that possible? The New York Post, as a publisher, they're taking their own risks, right? Publishing that story. Shouldn't that be between the New York Post and their lawyers? I mean, why is Twitter getting involved in this and locking the accounts of anyone who dared to share the story? The New York Post, by the way, was just announced that it is endorsing Donald Trump for the presidency, but it can't tweet out that news because it reported on this laptop that's allegedly Hunter Biden's, which our own director of national intelligence has confirmed as authentic. That's somehow not allowed. Nope, not allowed. You know, I'll tell you one thing. It would just make this all so much easier, right? If Hunter Biden or Joe Biden could just tell us this laptop is not Hunter's, doesn't belong to him. The laptop is fake. The emails on it are fake. The text messages are fake, or they've been doctored. Just tell us that instead of sort of insisting, but not insisting, that none of it's real. It's just a smear campaign. There's no proof, no evidence. How is there no evidence given that this laptop is now there? And by the way, given that the people on the emails listed, one of them has even come forward, the former business partner of Hunter Biden. And he's alleging that Joe Biden had a lot of say in these deals. You know, look, there's fair questions out there that need to be answered. So I'm going to keep asking them. If you listen to the podcast yesterday, Monday, October 26, about 12 minutes in, I get into this and I talk about Biden Inc. It was a story. You know that it was a story before Joe was running as the Democrat nominee. But as soon as he becomes the nominee, well, then so much for that, right? In fact, it was so much a story that back in August of 2019, there's a piece in a mainstream media outlet called Politico. You probably know it by a straight news reporter, not a columnist, entitled Biden Inc. The details of Biden Inc. include, you know, a look at the hedge fund. The story includes a look at the hedge fund that they had started. And meanwhile, I want to point to something else that is just out. 64 pages, all detailing Biden's alleged dealings with the Chinese. It was reviewed and promoted actually by an HSBC Peking University economics professor that has previously written at times for Bloomberg. And it really details the career of Hunter Biden as his career relates to China. 64 pages, allegedly all public information. I'm going through it as we speak, and tomorrow I will have any relevant intel for you if in fact it's reportable. But as I said, a lot of this seems to be from public sources. So this may have just been an example of somebody putting it all together into 64 pages. But, you know, I want to go through it and bring some of that to you as it comes out. Anyway, back to how this all started here, right? Joe Biden, he's getting up there in age, and he may not think Americans deserve an answer to all of this on the laptop. But I'll tell you one thing, we know better, and we sure as heck do. Coming up, did 60 Minutes never read the Mueller report? Is 60 Minutes not familiar with the fact that the president's campaign was spied upon by our own government? The reporter seems entirely clueless on the issue of the wiretapping of the Trump campaign's phones. Wow. Carter Page, well, you know, he's got quite a story to tell, but apparently 60 Minutes just wasn't listening. That's next. Okay, we know the media hates Trump, right? We know that the mainstream media really despises him. But we've got new evidence of it in the latest edition of 60 Minutes, for which, you know, I got to hand it to the president. He was really smart to release the entire excerpt of this interview, because you just don't know when it's the liberal media out there filming you. And this is very old fashioned styled TV, right? 60 Minutes. They tape and they tape and they tape and they tape, and then they whittle it all down to a few minutes. Everything is so darn scripted. So they film and they film and they film. They only use a small part of the interview. I mean, what, 7-8 minutes of a sit-down interview with the president of the United States when he gave her, the reporter, 35? I mean, one of the things that I was most struck about was by, you know, how the reporter was really adamant when she said, well, we can't prove that. We don't know that the Obama administration spied on the Trump campaign. And she really dug in a way that was quite vehement. And I would only recommend that she go back and read volume one of the Mueller report, because, you know, maybe you don't want to call it spying, but certainly they wiretapped Carter Page's phone, right? I mean, here's the deal. Candidate Trump's aide, Carter Page, he had his phone wiretapped by the Obama administration. They did this based on a whole bunch of Russian disinformation. Really, it was disinformation. I mean, the so-called dirty dossier. You want to talk Russian disinformation? Forget about Hunter's laptop. We're talking about that so-called dossier. You have only to look at that, which was compiled by an ex-British spy who had been paid by the Clinton team, right, by a law firm that worked for the Clinton campaign. And this British spy, he hired a guy who at the time our own FBI believed was possibly a Russian spy himself. Here in the U.S. And he's the guy doing all this research. He's the guy calling up all of the former KGB contacts saying, hey, what do you got on Trump? I mean, come on. And then they use this research, again, bought and paid for by the Clinton campaign. They use this research to get themselves a FISA court warrant on the Trump campaign. Never told the FISA court judge that they were using opposition research. Never bothered to check the darn research, never bothered to source anything. I mean, it's like, can you imagine if I went with a story when I had no actual proof of something, no sourcing on it? It's effectively like what they did. They had a bunch of hearsay, a bunch of opposition research, I should point out. That's where it came from. And they went and got a FISA warrant on the Trump campaign because of it. So, you know, the president calls it spying. Whatever it was, I mean, she really seemed to be in the dark about all that. And it made for a very uncomfortable moment, really. Look, I don't think I would have done the interview if I was him, really, because I remember Jack Welch, who I used to interview a ton, and I would say, oh, well, we can do it to tape, et cetera. And he's like, no, Trish, I am not doing an interview to tape. You remember the legendary Jack Welch. He was the CEO of GE. And he insisted, he said, I will never do an interview to tape. You know, I've learned the hard way. Basically, because they edit the darn thing and the producers are cutting the tape and they take what you say out of context. And so he was right. Jack Welch was right. You know, what's the point in ever doing one of these interviews where you give them 35 minutes and they whittle it down to 6 or 7? So good for the president for releasing the whole thing. The problem is anyone who's on the fence right now, anyone who's in the middle, if they watch this, then, you know, they're going to come away with it from it. Saying, you know, and especially if they like 60 Minutes and they like this reporter, saying, well, who do I believe? Do I believe 60 Minutes or do I believe him? And she was vehement. She was absolutely, you know, adamant, saying, there was no spying. There was no spying. You can't say that. How can you say that? You know, again, the spying might be sort of a technical term, but the reality is they used opposition research to get a FISA warrant, never told the judge, and then they wiretapped the guy's phone. So call it what you want. There was something going on. And so we get back to this question of how much of an effect will the media really have on this election? We don't really know. I mean, we're going to find out in 1 week, right? And I got to tell you, listen, if he wins, and I think there's a good chance he actually still could, because they've just not really accounted for all the people that won't tell the pollsters what they really think. But can you imagine the look on the media's face if he actually gets this and he gets 4 more years? Gosh, well, that will be pretty funny to see. They will be really shocked, and it will show you that their influence has really waned and really been diminished. Anyway, here's the good news. Here's the good news, everyone. Regardless of what happens, you know what? This president's legacy is going to be so significant. Think about it. Not one, not two, but 3 Supreme Court justices. My congratulations to Amy Coney Barrett. What a woman. What a career she has. What a family she has. Really serving as an inspiration, I think, to young women everywhere, that you can do anything you want in a real meritocracy, which is what this country has been and needs to continue to be. So share this podcast. Join me on trishintel.com. You can email me there. You can sign up for correspondence. And this way, we will always be in touch. There's no more cancel culture as far as I'm concerned. I'll see you tomorrow right here.